silent auction is a great way to donate money and also end up with some cool art. And just like links to our PayPal account, unagallerypdx@gmail.com. Yeah.
How much is the cover?
I think it's $5 to $10.
Okay, slide and scale.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And where is Una Gallery located?
Una Gallery is located as part of the Everett Station Lofts in Northwest Portland on the corner of Northwest Broadway and Flanders.
Okay.
Yeah.
The heart of it.
The heart of it.
The heart of the art district.
Yeah, it's a great location. I mean, that's been a really cool resource to have, to be in a really accessible place.
Yeah. I'm dying to know if other directors in the area are peeking their heads in and going, what's going on there? Do you ever get any of that? What's in your gallery?
We do. And it's a little complicated because just like the neighbors are not necessarily a huge part of our mission. So explaining our mission to like white cis het folks can be a little
daunting.
Yeah. We're like, oh, well, this isn't up for debate though. I think it's more just that question of like, well, why would you be so specific about the people that you're, you know, that sort of like
really,
really well-meaning,
oh,
moderate energy.
My goodness.
I mean, also, there's really great neighbors and stuff, and people are excited about the project, but we do, just because of our location, we have to explain ourselves a lot.
Thank you so much for coming on. As we close, is there anything else you'd like the world to know about Una Gallery?
We love you. That's all.
That's the best ending ever, actually, to an in-depth. We love you, too.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was great.
Thanks for coming on.
The time is 6 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Girl, KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Next Level 3.0's party, Vogue Beach Please, on Saturday, July 1st from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at Tonic Lounge in Portland. Next Level 3.0 is a collaboration with Flawless Shade, the House of Flora, and the House of Ada, featuring KBOO's Dina B and DJ Gila River Monster, and more DJs and performers. Costumes are highly recommended. Again, that's Next Level 3.0's party, Vogue Beach Please, on Saturday, July 1st from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at the Tonic Lounge, 3100 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Yeah. Good evening, dear listeners. You are listening to Preference and Experiment in Queer Radio. I'm your host, Alan. We're here every second and fifth Tuesday of the month from 6 to 7 p.m. here on KBOO. On the telephone from New York City, I've got Craig Wilsey. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I want to mention first that we have folks in the second half of the hour who are organizers in Portland's Trans Pride March. So stick around, folks, and get all the details there. Craig, you are, among other things, a member of Jewish Voice for Peace. And what we're going to dig into today is a bit about Israel, Palestine, queerness, publicity, and the U.S. So there's a lot there. This is something we've taken a look at from different angles on the show before, so I'm always excited to have a new voice in the conversation. Craig, I want to ask you about something else. I'd like to have you introduce yourself.
Sure. Yeah. I'm Craig Wilsey. I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm a writer and teacher. And I'm a member of JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace. And I'm also on the organizing collective for US ACP, which is the US campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel.
Mm-hmm. I want to jump in a different direction. You told me in an email that just a brief aside, that you are author of The Value of Homelessness, Managing Surplus Life in the United States. Can you give us maybe just a paragraph or two about the subject of your book?
Sure. That book evolved out of earlier work that I had done as a social worker in a homeless transitional living program for homeless LGBT youth in Los Angeles. And then I worked as a tenant organizer in New York City. And the book is really about the ways that discourse and policy on homelessness has evolved over especially the last 25 years. What I look at in the book is the ways that programs that profess to aim or that profess to end homelessness actually often inadvertently extend homelessness or reproduce the conditions of it. So I'm really looking at the ways that homelessness has been redefined over the last 20 years as primarily an economic problem, not for people living without housing, but actually for the cities in which they live. And so we've had a shift in policy that's really been about containing the economic impact of homeless populations on urban, you know, consumer and tourist economies, which is not the same thing as dealing with the economic causes at the root of homelessness. So part of what I'm trying to do in the book is really reframe conversations about homelessness back to an understanding that, you know, homelessness is a material condition that's produced by racial capitalism, and it's about a lack of affordable housing, and we need to shift our policy focus back towards those questions.
All right. I'm looking forward to taking a look at that myself.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, so tell us about the Celebrate Israel Parade. I think that's the easiest place to jump in.
Sure. So this past Sunday in New York City, two Sundays ago now, there was the annual Celebrate Israel Parade, which is a massive parade that takes place every year. As the name implies, it's, you know, organized in celebration of the State of Israel. And every year that it takes place, there's also protests. People come out to take a stand against Israeli state practices and oppression, suppression, and displacement of Palestinians by the State of Israel, and also to come out and vocally oppose New York City's support of the State of Israel. This year, Jewish Voice for Peace coordinated, along with some other groups, a series of actions meant to both disrupt the parade and to bring, a message of solidarity and support for Palestinians. So over 100 people participated in a set of actions. It started in the morning with a family-friendly event, a sort of public gathering and protest that was called Celebrate the End of Apartheid Altogether. And so that took place in the morning. And then throughout the several hours of the parade, there were a number of actions to disrupt the parade. So, for example, one contingent blocked one set of activists blocked the mayor's contingent, Mayor Bill de Blasio. Another contingent blocked the NYPD contingent in the parade. And then I was part of an action that involved five queer and trans Jewish activists and allies who did an action in response to the LGBT contingent in the parade.
So these interruptions, what were the
sure.
What was the meaning behind the interruptions you participated in?
I mean, the you know, overall the goal of the series of actions was to, you know, make a very public and vocal statement that occupation and apartheid are nothing to celebrate. You know, this parade is it's a nationalistic, jingoistic celebration of a state that for 50 years has been occupying the, you know, the West Bank and other parts of historic Palestine, and for almost 70 years now has been a settler colonial project in an apartheid state. So you know, the actions were planned again to disrupt the parade, to say that occupation and apartheid are nothing to celebrate, and they were also planned as a opportunity for those of us living in the U.S. and those of us who are part of Jewish communities and their allies to step up our commitment to supporting the struggle for justice in Palestine and the struggle of, you know, Palestinians in the diaspora who are working tirelessly to challenge the Israeli state and its illegal practices. Mm-hmm. So our group, we joined. There was a public Facebook announcement for an LGBT contingent inviting LGBT people to march in the parade. And so we responded to that call, we joined the contingent, and then after marching with them for about an hour or so, at a designated point in the parade, we formed a line blocking the parade, and we held signs that said, queer Jews for free Palestine, and no pride in apartheid, and we chanted, and we were able to hold the parade and block it for several minutes before we were rushed by the contingent. We were then able to reassemble and form another line and block the parade again, and then eventually were arrested by the NYPD.
So let's talk about Israel and queerness.
Sure. So I, as you know, and I know you've talked about this on your program before, we felt as queer and trans Jewish people and allies that we in particular needed to respond to this phenomenon that Palestinian activists call pinkwashing. And so pinkwashing refers to the ways in which the state of Israel uses its putative support for gay and lesbian people as a distraction or a cover for its daily human rights abuses of Palestinians. And this is an actual official state practice. This isn't, you know, a idea that it was invented by, you know, activists. This is actually something that the state of Israel has been pursuing very aggressively and very intentionally. So in 2005, the state of Israel launched a program called Brand Israel, and they did this in consultation with U.S.-based marketing and advertising firms. And the purpose of Brand Israel was to shift global public perception of Israel and to draw the support of progressive people to Israel. And so they wanted to project an image of Israel as aligned with progressive values. And so one of the things that Brand Israel identified as key for that was projecting an image of support for gay and lesbian people. And so as a result of that, you know, now for the last 12 years, Israel has aggressively pursued, again, producing and circulating an image of itself as it likes to say, like a safe haven for gay people in the Middle East. And of course, this is also based on all sorts of, you know, racist and Islamophobic ideas, which we can also talk about. But what Israel has been doing then is things like funding LGBT film festivals around the world. Israel has been sending delegates of Israeli queer and trans activists to the U.S. cities to meet with their counterparts. And it also has spent millions of dollars building up a tourist industry for LGBT people and promoting things like Tel Aviv Pride. So because of the context of pinkwashing, we felt that it was very important to show up at this parade and demonstrate that queer and trans people stand in solidarity with struggle for justice in Palestine, and that we refuse to be used as a cover story for the state of Israel and its ongoing dispossession of Palestinians.
Mm-hmm. Last year, I got a look at the itinerary for the LGBTQ a trip that American folks were invited to. Visit Israel and spend a week visiting with folks in the military, entertainers, politicians, all planned out so that queer and trans folks themselves wouldn't just be subject, but they could experience the beauty and joy of this welcoming society.
That's exactly right. Israel has said explicitly that they see those trips as an opportunity to turn queer and trans people into ambassadors for Israel. Mm-hmm. And of course, they've been doing the same thing. There was a lot of attention to a sports delegation a few months ago because some of the athletes from the U.S. refused to go on that trip and publicly denounced it. They've been doing this by bringing student activists, targeting, for example, like Black activists at U.S. campuses and bringing them to Israel. Mm-hmm. And they see this absolutely as a way to take people who might otherwise have a sort of obvious affinity with the struggle for justice in Palestine and attempt to turn them into allies and ambassadors for Israel.
Let's talk about the homophobia that is embedded in this brand Israel pro-queer focus. In what they might call a publicity campaign, we can call it a propaganda exercise.
I think that's right, yeah. Hasbara is the term that we use for that, the sort of propaganda of the Israeli state. So, this whole sort of image of Israel as a safe haven for LGBT people in the Middle East depends on an idea of the Middle East as an otherwise hostile place for queer and trans people. And what it does, in effect, is erase the existence of queer and trans Palestinians who are doing everyday active work to oppose occupation and apartheid. One of the most common responses, our experience of the parade, the crowd was very hostile to our action. In addition to the contingent, shoving and pushing past us, there were chants from the calls from the crowd for the police to pepper spray us. We were called capos and dogs. And one of those common things that queer and trans people in the movement for Palestine hear all the time is that if we went anywhere else in the Middle East, we would be killed and we'd be hung, and that Hamas in particular would hang and kill us. And so this idea of Israel as this bastion of freedom for queer and trans people comes alongside this very racist anti-Arab story and this Islamophobic story. And it refuses an engagement with Palestinians living in historic Palestine who are fighting against occupation and apartheid. So, just last week, Haneen Mikey, a longtime Palestinian queer activist, published an op-ed in Newsweek here calling for a boycott of Tel Aviv Pride. And in part in response to that, Israeli queer and trans activists blocked the Tel Aviv parade, I think just a few days after we did our action here in New York. So of course there is, there's a vibrant queer and trans activist community in Palestine and in the diaspora. And we see here in the U.S., our job is engaging with them, listening to their analysis, and trying to follow through on our commitment to supporting their struggle. But that the existence of those people is completely erased in this pinkwashing narrative.
Indeed, I think part of the film productions that Israel seeks to distribute or has been distributing are about one of the themes is queer Palestinian, queer Arab folks move to Israel for safety.
Right. That's right, yeah.
And as I understand, it's certainly not that simple for those folks on either side of the border.
Of course not. So, there's been a couple films that have been pretty high profile in the last couple of years that are sort of, on this theme of queer Palestinians being saved as they're like welcomed into Tel Aviv. What those stories, of course, erase is all the actually legal because it's the law in Israel, the legal systematic forms of discrimination that all Palestinians face. And as is a queer activist in Palestine once said, when you're being stopped at a checkpoint, it doesn't matter if you're queer or not, right? So this sort of safe haven doesn't undercut, or the story of the safe haven doesn't undercut the reality of living under occupation and apartheid. And then again, so the groups in Palestine, like this organization, Al-Kaus, which is a group of queer Palestinians who understand their work as being work of simultaneously addressing the issues of homophobia in their own communities and issues of, queer and gender, sexual and gender identity. And they see that work as inseparable from the work of opposing occupation and apartheid. And they understand that the colonial context in which they live shapes their experiences of gender and sexuality. And so those things can't really be separated out. And again, if people are actually interested in the issues of queer liberation in Palestine, there are places that we can go to and work that we can support. But the pinkwashing narrative, once again, sweeps all of that under the rug and refuses to engage it.
We had Dean Spade on to talk about the movie Pinkwashing Exposed, and yes. Kabu was a host when the movie came to Portland, I guess last year, maybe a year and a half ago. And we're not too far from Olympia, where that co-op struggled with creating a boycott of products created in Israel. Go ahead.
Please. Oh, go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, this is a topic that's been bubbling up in the Pacific Northwest, and I look forward to seeing where activists go with this. What were you going to say, Craig?
Well, it's interesting. So, there's been a fair amount of backlash in the Jewish press against our action, JVP has been accused of being homophobic for doing this action because our action emerged from the LGBT contingent of the parade. Our action's been called a hate crime. And I think that that story it's actually been really interesting to watch the backlash unfold, because of course this backlash is about then depicting the parade as the innocent victims of our aggressive act. And this is exactly the story that Israel and Zionism tells all the time, right? That Israel is this innocent victim defending itself against sort of the aggressive violence of Palestinians. And so for us, who are white and Jewish, it's been actually really instructive to see this backlash unfold and get a little sense of how it works, and so that we can better support our Palestinian comrades when they're experiencing it. And it's also been interesting because, I don't know if you all have been following that the Pride Parade in D.C. this past weekend was blocked by a group of people who were sort of calling No Justice, No Pride, and they were opposing the presence of police in the Pride Parade and the corporate sponsorship and the role of the military-industrial complex in particular in support for D.C. Pride. And so I think we're also in a broader, really exciting moment in the U.S. of some struggle around what queer politics might mean right now, and pushing back a little bit on some of the effects of the last decade or two of mainstreaming, which has really pulled sort of public gay and lesbian politics away from its commitments to racial and social justice. So I was really excited to hear about that action in D.C. and the action in Tel Aviv, and to feel like our action was was lined up with that. Because if I can say one more thing about that day, one of the other groups that targeted the parade targeted the NYPD contingent, and they did that in support of JVP's new campaign, which is called Deadly Exchange. And that campaign is meant to highlight and end police exchange programs between the U.S. and Israel. And so the work of that campaign is meant to link the work that we're doing in the Justice for Palestine movement to work being done in the U.S. around Black Lives Matter, working to end police violence and killing of Black people in the United States by police. And so it's been exciting to see these connections across some of these different movements. And I think I'm really excited to kind of see what happens over the next couple of weeks of Pride things here in the U.S. as this analysis hopefully keeps circulating and as people keep pushing back on some of the co-optation of our movements to support, you know, again, racist, colonial, and militarized agendas.
Yeah, certainly that's, you know, we're learning the extent of Israel's training of U.S. police forces. And it's
So the, you know, after September 11th, high-ranking officer, officials from the NYPD went to Israel expressly to train with Israel security forces. And the demographic unit, the infamous demographic unit of NYPD, which has been spying on Muslim communities in New York City by using undercover cops and informants, sending them into community organizations, mosques, student schools and student organizations. That program was expressly modeled on tactics used by the State of Israel and the occupied West Bank. And then we also have groups like the Anti-Defamation League here in the U.S. Sponsoring contingents of police from around the U.S. to go and visit Israel to do these exchanges. So I think that this deadly exchange program that JVP is working on is going to be really important over the next couple of years, and again, like a really exciting place to build some of these links across different movements opposing police violence.
Mm-hmm. There was a editorial by Stephen Thrasher in today's, I guess it was yesterday's Guardian, titled "We Need to Get Corporate America and Police Units Out of Pride Marches."
Yeah,
it's kind of a blow up in Pittsburgh, right? Are you familiar with this?
I don't think I followed the Pittsburgh one.
No, they named their Pride Parade in full this year after a corporation has donated money to do that, and one that. A lot of folks find their corporate behavior extremely problematic. So,
interesting.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is grappling with just this question. Of course, every year in Portland, you know, there are folks who grumble about what they're seeing, police and Wells Fargo, and so on. And of course, you know, this may be the year that folks stand up and. In the way that folks on the East Coast are.
I'll be excited to see what happens here in New York over the next 2 weeks. You know, I think that all of us in the U.S. Who are doing any kind of, you know, activist or organizing work owe a huge debt to Black Lives Matter. I think Black Lives Matter has really reshaped the political landscape over the last couple of years. It's really changed the national conversation about systemic institutional racism, and I think it's helped really breathe new life into protest movements, it's inspiring people, I think, across movements to take new forms of and renewed forms of direct action, and so then to see, of course, Black Lives Matter has tons of trans and queer leadership within that movement. So it makes sense, but it's also been really exciting to see as a queer movement in general respond to the analysis and calls of Black Lives Matter and really identify some of the issues that Black Lives Matter has put on the table as central and important issues for queer and trans activists, especially around policing.
I think it's worth noting that for anyone who gets caught up in the crosshairs of brand Israel, whether Palestinian, Israeli, or American, there's some sort of there's this what pinkwashing comes down to is this appeal solely to people's sexuality to be the identifying marker.
That's exactly right. I was just reading a piece before we got before we began talking that was about how LGBT supporters of Trump are feeling like left behind by Pride this year, and they're feeling upset that Pride is being politicized. That entire position relies on an understanding that you can somehow separate gay and lesbian identity from issues of economics and issues of racial inequality and all of this. And so, I think it's really exciting. I think that, renewed attention to the ways that different forms and systems of oppression intersect and feed off of each other and support each other. I think it's, we're in a really exciting moment, and seeing people really putting that kind of intersectional analysis into action. I'm excited to see that queer and trans people are really taking that on in a serious way.
Yeah. Well, here in Portland, I think my sense is that activists are learning the tools that they need to begin to step up resistance and positive pressure from activists in the East Coast. But what I want ultimately is to find a way for queer America and queer Palestine to be in conversation. You know, I think for so many of us, we're abstracted, and it's really difficult to hear people speak for their own experience.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I think, and you know, those connections can be hard to make. It can be hard to collaborate and connect with, you know, a population living under an occupation, and whose movement is restricted, you know, by definition of that occupation regime. But like, I do think like the way that the concept of pinkwashing has traveled is a good indicator of what's possible when those relationships are built. You know, so Palestinians have, you know, developed this notion to help us understand critically what Israel is doing. But then, you know, we can use that analysis of pinkwashing to understand that, you know, when the NYPD marches in the Pride Parade, that's a pinkwashing of police violence. And, you know, it's an attempt to get us to think that the NYPD stands for, you know, inclusion or stands for diversity or equality, when we know, you know, the opposite of all that is true. And so I think like that sort of analysis as it moves around also then helps us think about how to and see the sort of natural links across the different work that we're doing.
That's great. Craig, do you have last thoughts for us?
No, I don't think so. I just hope everybody will keep it going over these next couple of weeks and months and years. I'm pretty excited to see how different we're feeling going into Pride this year. And I think, you know, I think there's in some ways been a positive effect of Trump moving into office. I think it's raised the stakes, and of course, a lot of the issues that people are responding to under Trump, people were working on under Obama and in all the administrations before. These aren't all new issues, but I do think it's provoked a new level of engagement and some new militancy. So I'm really excited to see where that takes us.
Great. Thanks so much, Craig.
Thank you very much. It was great to talk.
You're welcome. We've been chatting with Craig Wilsey, a New York activist working on fighting pinkwashing. We're going to hear a little music, and then we'll be back to talk about Portland's Trans Pride March.
Jenna.
Welcome back to Preference, dear listeners. I'm Alan, your host tonight. For the rest of the hour, we're going to have a great conversation with the folks who are organizing Portland's Trans Pride March, which is this Saturday, starting at 2, I believe. Mm-hmm. Is that right? We've got a number of fine folks in the studio, so I'm going to have everybody introduce yourselves, starting with you.
Lyles McFarland, she, her pronouns.
My name is Siori Oni. I use he, him, his pronouns.
Hi, Josie Baker, she and her.
Felicia Daria, she and her pronouns.
Leo Sell, they, them pronouns, and also he, him pronouns.
Great. So this Saturday, what's happening? Tell us what's happening.
Well, just to give a little history, this will be the fourth annual Trans March associated with Portland's Pride Weekend. The first year, kind of just a few people got together and contacted Pride Northwest and just said, hey, can we do this? It was very informal. We were a little late to the game, but we organized a march. And we had about 400 people show up. And so the next year, 2015, we got more organized as Greater Portland Trans Unity. We put out a call for people who were interested in joining us. Had more people come in to help organize. We got started earlier. We started planning more things. We had our first rally. We started the North Park blocks, which is like Burnside and Park. So we had a rally and we had some speakers and we had about 2,000 people, which was quite exciting, quite invigorating. It was a real community celebration. Last year, I had some health issues, and I had to drop out of the organizing. Lyles, would you like to talk about that?
Yeah. I came in 2015, the second year of the march after the initial homegrown, like community-based, how the organization started. But last year, it was just literally just four of us that put on the march. Because I guess a lot of people after the first, like the second year when there was like, we had 40 or so people on the march and a lot of them realized that, oh, there's a lot of work that goes into this. And so most of those people kind of disappeared the next year. So it was really kind of hectic putting on last year's march. We were actually pretty pleased with the turnout. We had, I think, close to 2,500 people that year, this past year. We had Candy Brings Plenty leading the march as a part of the Two-Spirit Society, which was wonderful. She's they're a wonderful person. But yeah, like there were a lot of growing pains we learned through last year's march and have kind of put together for like taking the lessons learned to kind of do a much better job this year. And one of the main things that we're focusing on is like, I'll talk about my security portion, but like how to make the, I guess, community able to police itself. So mm-hmm. we have less of actual police involvement with the march because many of people in our community are disadvantaged and have had terrible experiences with the police. It's not everybody's experience, but enough of people in our community have felt this way where we've decided that we're looking into how we can completely remove the police presence from the march itself, but there will be a police presence this year, but I can get into that later for my section.
So this year, this is Leo talking, and I'm one of the new members to the planning committee, and this year we have over 14 members as part of the committee, and we've been working for about 8 weeks total, and we've worked really hard. We just had our last meeting, and we're really excited for the march, which is this Saturday, the 17th. The rally starts at 2 p.m., and it's at the North Park blocks. We have, I think, over 9 speakers, and we also have a DJ for entertainment within that time period. As we have a rally, that's a time to connect with other folks and feel a sense of community and celebration, and also listen to some of the different issues that are intersectional within trans rights. After we have the rally, we build an energy, and that turns into a march that ends at the Portland Pride Expo area on the waterfront. So that's sort of the plan for this year. Also at, I believe, 5:30 p.m., we have a couple different performances on the main stage of the Pride event stage. So that's what we're looking at for this year.
Thanks, Leo. Do we have a sense of who's going to be talking at the rally? Mm-hmm.
So we have a couple different speakers from different areas. Brooklyn Clark is speaking, and she's our keynote speaker. So she starts off the set, and Dr. Angela Carter will also be speaking. They're part of the Equi Institute here in Portland. Christopher Hammond, and does anyone know who Christopher's associated with by chance?
I don't. I know that he is a mental health social worker.
Gotcha.
And he is going to be speaking on trans issues within the mental health provider health system. Dr. Carter will be speaking on more general issues with trans health. Dr. Carter is a legend in the queer community here in Portland. They have been providing health care to trans and queer folks for many, many years here, and we're quite excited to have them speaking.
Some of our other speakers will be addressing issues such as housing, racial justice, economic justice. I myself will be speaking on education and what that looks like in public education. And we also have the founders of the TAP, which is the Trans Assistant Project, which started right after the election this year to help trans folks in the Portland area speaking. So a lot of great speakers around the community, and all of them are local community members.
Another thing that's a first for this year is that there will be other organizations at the Park Blocks who will be tabling, and I will give that over to Oni to speak about more about that.
Hi, this is Oni. We have so far likely tabling partners: Community Alliance of Tenants, Fair Housing Council, Outside In, Bradley Engel, Trans Assistant Project, Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition, Sex Worker Outreach Coalition, Marilyn Buck Abolitionist Collective, Critical Resistance, Gabriella, Street Roots, Greater Portland Trans Unity, Queer Rock Camp, and In Other Words, and Greater Portland Trans Unity, who is actually putting on the Trans March. So in addition to that, for tabling, we're actually hoping to find people who are interested in coming out, who have work that intersects with our community, and they're not normally capable of coming to Pride, who might actually want to come and table with us, in which case you can email greaterportlandtransunity@gmail.com. The only thing we ask is it'd be great if you could provide a table. If not, we'll figure something out. But again, we have space available as long as your organization intersects with our community. In addition to that, I am actually the volunteer coordinator, and we're still looking for transgender and cisgender allies who would be willing to volunteer, especially in the second half of the day from 3:30 onward. So if you're interested in doing that, I would love if you emailed us at greaterportlandtransunity@gmail.com as well.
Thanks, Oni.
You're welcome.
Okay, I guess I can speak to the security portion of the march now. I'm the security liaison, so I'll be dealing with connecting our security team and also handling the police. The way we envision it right now is that the police will, since it's a permitted march, we unfortunately have to have them in the area. So we're trying to have them be a block separated from us, so they'll be able to block off the streets but not be specifically adjacent to the march itself. As for If anything happens, we have contingencies in place for, just the typical, rabble rouser that wants to just yell awful things at people, and also if you have other people like the West Bower Baptist Church or other groups that like to protest, like last year. We actually have the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who are actually going to be there with a giant banner to help kind of block any people like that away from the march. And we're going to be focusing more on getting our march attendees away from the conflicting people, just because it's easier to manage the crowd than it is to get those people to go away. We have also the we'll have medics on site too as well for any kind of injuries. We have our own personal security team that will be wearing all black with white armbands that will handle any kind of things that we normally go to the police for, like if someone has a knife or anything like that. Like they would handle the act of isolating that person to ensure the safety of the marchgoers. So safety is a very big concern for us right now, especially in this year's climate with the election of Trump and the kind of the anger and hatred has been shown towards community especially the last year. We're not anticipating any kind of attacks or anything like that, but we're trying to be prepared and prepared ahead of time rather than trying to react when it happens. But like what we really are looking for is to build up, see how can we police ourselves, how can we protect ourselves. We don't need to involve the police, who generally speaking tend to escalate the violence in the situation rather than de-escalate it. So we have teams that are trained in de-escalation techniques to talk to the individuals, and just we feel like we've prepared as much as we can for any kind of security dangers. So I want to get that out there. If you're feeling afraid, that's okay. We're not going to say you have to come to this march. We're hoping that the fear won't keep people away, but that is that's a real concern people have, and we understand that, and we're working try to alleviate those fears. And one of the things we'll be talking about in the future is what does the police presence look like in the years going forward, and also
And thanks, Oz. If I could just add, this is the fourth year, mm-hmm. And we've always had our own security, safety, mm-hmm. Planning, and we've never had an incident. We've had the street preachers and the people like that. You're going to get them. You always get them. But we've successfully worked on de-escalating, getting people to move past those, and we haven't had any other major issues to date. So we're not anticipating any, but we are prepared for any contingency.
This is Preference. We're chatting with organizers of Portland's Trans Pride March, which is this Saturday. I'm losing my voice a little bit, unexpectedly. Before we move on, I want to go back to Oni. I want to hear from you what kinds of volunteer actions you need.
This is Oni again. Specifically at this moment, I need help with teardown, loadout, trash pickup, and de-escalation. We would prefer cisgender allies in these roles, specifically so trans people can march and participate in a day that celebrates them, in an event that celebrates them. So that would be very preferable. As for transgender people, we might need some more help in the morning with setup and load in. There's actually going to be de-escalation training this Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. at the North Park Blocks. And that would be a great way to get involved with that. And the de-escalation team, you can be transgender and involved in the march and marching and still actually perform that function. So that would be a great way to get involved.
Thank you.
I was actually going to talk about the security training on Thursday. And if anybody wants more specific information, they can email us at greaterportlandtransuni@gmail.com, and I will be able to respond to you immediately, hey, this is the specific location, you know, things that we can do or you might want to be interested in. And also same thing for tabling and et cetera.
I also have a couple practical pieces of advice, friendly reminders that help with safety, but also just help us all have fun the day of. We recommend that you go with a buddy and stay together. This includes your transportation to the march and transportation home, because those are two of the most vulnerable moments for you. So making sure you go with a buddy. It's also great to have a location that you plan to meet after the march, regardless of if the march goes really well or if a safety concern happens. We recommend you wear comfy shoes and bring snacks, and if the sun happens to appear by Saturday, put on some sunscreen. Be aware of surroundings, and this is especially true in terms of privilege. So check yourself. If you are someone who has more privilege, make sure you're monitoring other people, whether they're women, femmes, people of color, that sort of thing. Just be aware of surroundings. Please do not engage with the police in any way. Leave that to our safety teams. And finally, let our safety team handle and respond to harassers and trolls. They are trained on that, and our job is to make sure that you can have a prideful trans march. And they're looking to upset you, so the best thing you could do is walk away and let the safety team handle that. I also have a little bit of information about accessibility. We'll have two mobility trailers parked to the left of the main stage from 1 p.m. until kickoff at 3:30. We also will have the entire rally ASL interpreted. Every year so far, it sounds like we've had enough room for people who need access to the mobility trailers. And we also have worked really hard this year to make sure that the march is at a pace that everyone can work with. And so we look forward to seeing you there. And in addition to accessibility, we also want you to know that this is a family-friendly event. So for folks who are younger, older, whoever it is, bring them out, because we want them there to have some fun.
Thank you.
And if I could just add a final note on security and safety. Leo mentioned interacting with trolls and so forth. The peacekeeping people will be identifiable by a green armband.
Lime green armband.
Lime green armband. So if somebody is shouting things or trying to engage people in a negative fashion, just look for one of those people and let them know.
Yeah, the more you engage with them, that's what they want. And it's actually makes my job much harder, because when you're trying to convince the entire crowd that no, you don't have to explain, they won't listen to you. Just people want to get their wants in, and like with the basically, yeah, just don't engage. I know it can be tough to hear that kind of hateful language and not want to respond. But it's for the safety of the march, and also for our security people, if you could just let us take care of everything.
And are there other thoughts, other needs, other things to be excited about the rally and march?
Well, this is Josie over here. It's a great opportunity for the community at large to get to meet us and know us. If you have any kind of interest in perhaps knowing who are your folks in the community, we're going to be there celebrating, and this is a perfect time to establish some bonds and do some networking. Hopefully this will lead us to have a better year in which we can move forward together as one in a moment of rally, of celebration, and also as well of visibility and dissipating information for those folks who might need to have that information for themselves on our, also as well for others. Thank you.
Thanks, Josie.
You know, I have found one of the biggest things I get out of the Trans March and other trans events is that, I'll speak for myself, but I think this is true for a lot of us, we get very siloed in our daily lives with our small circles of friends and family and community, and it's easy to feel isolated and oppressed and attacked. And you know, every year at the Trans March, I'm looking around and going, wow, look at all of these hundreds of trans people that I don't even know, you know? And that is so cool. I mean, that gives me such a sense of liberation and just hope and awesomeness.
And I think in this day and age, what our community continues to see and what other oppressed communities continue to see is that existence is resistance. And I think that is a huge reason to show up on Saturday, whether you're an ally or a member of the trans community. If you show up and create a sign that says you exist, including if you're an ally, be a visible ally. If you have an issue that overlaps, if you're a teacher, if you're someone who works with homelessness, if you're someone who works within the immigration community, make a sign that says whatever your voice wants to say to the world and show up and be there. And that helps not just the trans community, but it helps all of the communities that are facing a lot of oppression right now.
We have about 3 minutes left. It's not a lot of time, but what do you have for us, honey?
I'd like to talk about the theme of our march this year. So basically, the concept we came up with is, how do we keep our hearts whole and our communities safe and healthy, even in the face of relentless oppression? More than 2,000 trans, non-binary, two-spirit, and intersex people marched with our allies last year, demonstrating our collective power and commitment to racial justice, economic justice, and trans liberation. And this year, we're doing it again. This is organized by Portland, Greater Portland Trans Unity and the 2017 Trans March Planning Committee. The fourth annual Portland Trans March is dedicated to keeping our flame alive, and that is our theme, keeping our flame alive. We will honor and celebrate the love in our hearts and the tangible everyday power in our connected efforts and acts of solidarity with each other. We hope you'll come march with us and help show the world that we are here, we are proud, and we are not backing down. Bring your signs and banners and let's make some noise. And if you don't have signs and banners, we will have a station there to make your own.
Wonderful. Last thoughts?
I would like to say, the first march, there's only a few hundred people. The second year, we had 2,000. Last year, we had close to 2,500 or even more. We didn't really get a full accurate count. But I don't want people to be afraid. And I would like that trend of increasing crowd size because our community is a lot bigger than we ever really imagined it was in Portland, especially than I ever thought it would be. And I think we did the research and there's only the trans march in, I believe, in San Francisco is larger than ours. We're the second largest trans march in the U.S., which is pretty phenomenal to me. I love being able to see our community coming together, and if you could make it out, we would love to see you.
Quick facts: the rally begins at 2:00. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And the march kicks off at 3:30. So come out and be loud and proud.
And that's this Saturday. And is it the same as last year that it begins in North Park Box?
Right. Right by the elephant.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Well, we have time for a very quick last thought.
I would say my final thought would be, if you're feeling a little bit of fear, hesitation about showing up, remember that our greatest power is having hope, even within oppressed communities. So show up and show the community that you're there and stronger than ever. And that's the way we beat the system that's been happening in the past couple months.
Just so much excitement. Five days to go. So much excitement.
See you there.
I think we're down to 4 days.
Four days.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah. All right. We look forward to seeing everybody at the Trans Pride March on Saturday. The rally begins at 2:00. We'll march at 3:30. Thanks to Kyle in the booth for making all of this happen. Thanks to everybody who's with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, and to Craig for joining us earlier. Hard Knock Radio is next. I'm Alan. This has been Preference.
KBOO Community Radio will be broadcasting live from the 25th Annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music and Food Festival. Saturday, June 24th, will be on-site at Lilith Albina Park and will broadcast the festival from 1:30 to 9:30 p.m.
One more time.
Tune in to hear sets from Surround Sound, No Limits, In Touch, Tamara Stevens, and more. Again, that's a live broadcast from Good in the Hood, Saturday, June 24th, starting at 1:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act.